read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Hold them in your hand, and you'll hippity hoppity clippity cloppity off to a different land.
Welcome back to the Round Table. I'm Sarah LaDuc, in for Joe Donahue this morning, and it is time, as that festive tune, that jaunty melody indicates, it is time for this week's book picks. Our booksellers today are from Rough Draft Bar and Books in Kingston, New York, and Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York. Drew Broussard and Nora Taylor are here from Rough Draft. Hello, hello. Good to see you.
Hiya.
I should say, good to see you. Drew, welcome for the first time ever, Nora.
Thank you so much. Thrilled to be here.
Very excited to meet you and hear about your reading recs. And of course, from the Open Door Bookstore, Lily Bartels. Hi, Lily. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm all right. Last Saturday was Independent Bookstore Day. How did it go for everyone? Did people come out?
Smashing.
Yeah. It was fantastic. We had fantastic day.
Did you have any special events or readings or anything, or was it just sell, sell, sell?
It was sell, 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 with some perks. You know, we had raffle drawings and special bags that we had purchased for the event, and yeah. But the best part of it was the energy.
I told you before we came on air that I was in Astoria, so I went to the Astoria bookshop on Independent Bookstore Day and got a sticker. Proudly displayed it as though I had voted, because in a way I did not.
Yes,
with my dollars.
With your dollars.
All right. Lee, let us begin recommending fantastic reads for the people listening out there. Lily, why don't you start?
I will start with American Fantasy by Emma Staub. In a nutshell, this is a story about what happens when your teenage fantasy comes true after you're already an adult. So the story follows Annie. She's just turned 50, and she has some big feelings about that. And she's also reeling from her recent divorce. And she and her sister have planned on going on this 4-day themed cruise together.
Well,
her sister breaks her leg, but she insists that Annie go without her. And Annie is less than enthusiastic about it, but she reluctantly gets on the ship. And this is a cruise that features all five members of a fictional 1990s boy band called Boy Talk, whom she and her sister adored when they were young. Now she finds herself on this ship with the band and thousands of their fans. And, you know, she's less than excited about it, but she throws herself into it because she feels like she's in a bad place, and so this will be a real distraction for her. But she certainly doesn't expect to enjoy the music or truly connect with it or the fans or the band. And ultimately, that not only happens, but she also reconnects with herself. Or as she says at one point, it felt good to be part of something where your passion was celebrated instead of mocked.
There you go.
Yeah.
Climb cringe mountain.
Oh, embrace it.
That's American Fantasy by Emma Straub. Oh, go ahead.
So when Annie actually does meet one of the band members named Keith, he's clearly going through a hard time. She feels drawn to him, but she wonders if this connection is real or if she's just being as delusional as some of the other fans. Emma Staub creates this really wonderfully immersive world where for 4 days the fans live in this fantasy with a band that once meant everything to them years ago. You feel like you're right there with all these cast characters, and it's an emotional voyage, and it's a very big-hearted story, and the ending is just right.
Perfect. That's American Fantasy by Emma Straub, available now. It is what I bought in Astoria over the weekend, so I'm really looking forward to it. And Joe Donahue did interview Emma about that book on the book show, and that interview was, of course, on our website. Nora, are you ready to do your first ever book pick?
Oh,
ever?
Boy, am I. So my first book pick is Make Your Way Home by Carrie R. Moore. It actually came out last year, but I missed it, and then I picked it up when she was nominated or actually on the list of the National Book Foundation, 5 Under 30. It's her debut short story collection, and it follows the short stories are a wide variety of stories about Black families throughout the South, covering different eras, different timelines. And she really just sort of picks the reader up and drops them into these worlds of a very, like, varying degree of pages, varying amount of pages. And they're all pretty evocative and very tender. My favorite one is a story about a brother and sister who are their family moves out of their house because they're afraid of some violence. And so they're just some really touching, very funny moments. And I think sometimes you read a new writer and you're like, oh, yes, I think I'm going to be following you for years to come. And that was sort of how I felt when I put this book down.
This sounds fantastic. Make Your Way Home by Carrie R. Moore, a short story collection. It does feel like short story collection season, doesn't
yes.
it? A little bit. I mean, it's very anecdotal, obviously, but I feel...
You pick up, read a story, you go back outside, you read a story, you come in. You know, it's
you
a
do
nice...
some weeding, uh-huh. do some walking, do some napping. And of course, a lot of work. Drew, what is your first pick today?
This is an older book that was just reissued by New York Review of Books Classics. It is called, the title is so long.
It's really confusing. I had to think about it a lot.
The Universal Baseball Association, Inc., J. Henry Wow, Proprietor. It's by Robert Coover. It first came out in 1968. Coover, I came to him through his short stories. He is a master trickster, sort of in the vein of like Borges, but an American sort of postmodernist. When I was working in theater years and years and years ago, a friend of mine who was not a big reader was like, you read books. You need to read this. And he handed me an old copy of this book. And I was transfixed. I've been waiting for it to come back into print. It is about a man who starts a fantasy baseball game. It's not quite like Dungeons & Dragons. It's certainly not like what we look at fantasy as now. He has created these teams, this league, and he plays it by himself in his apartment. And it's kind of just his life as he gets caught up in the story of this game. But as anybody who's ever played a tabletop role-playing game or ever just rolled the dice for luck about something knows, strange things can happen. And it's magnificent the way that Coover, in 1968, like way, way, way before Dungeons & Dragons was a thing, captures that feeling of what can happen to a story when chance gets thrown into it. There is a roll of the dice in this book that is the single most thrilling roll of the dice that I have ever experienced. And that is somebody who has played Dungeons & Dragons and had thrilling adventures on the table. And the way that Coover takes this story and builds it in a way that I don't want to give away what happens at the end, but he builds it into this mythological story about America, about chance, about baseball. It is thrilling, and I'm so glad that it is back in print.
A new reissue of the Universal Baseball Association, Inc., J. Henry Waugh Prop. Dot proprietor by Robert Coover. It is. I looked at it. I was like, can this be the title? Does it mean?
For the longest time, I'm just like,
so much punctuation.
Coover's baseball book.
Yeah. The Universal Baseball Association. We'll get you there.
Yes.
By Robert Coover. Fantastic. It sounds really, really interesting and different from a lot of things you hear about.
Yeah.
Lily, next book.
Well, I have a book that's also on Nora's list.
Cool.
Do you mind if I talk about it?
Go for it.
Okay. So, the book is London Falling. The subtitle is A Mysterious Death in a Gilded City and a Family Search for Truth by Patrick Radden Keefe. Patrick Radden Keefe is the author of the book Say Nothing, which was a phenomenal bestseller. It still pops up now and again on the bestseller list. It was the story of an Irish mother of 10 who was murdered by the IRA during the Troubles in Ireland. In this new book, he covers another true crime story. This one is about a young man's mysterious death in London in 2019. Zach Brettler was 19 years old when he jumped from the fourth floor balcony of an apartment building into the Thames in apparently trying to get away from something or someone. The man living in the apartment was a gang enforcer named Varinda Sharma. He died a year later, which sort of stymied the Scotland Yard's investigation into Zach's death. And the only other person who was a witness was a crooked businessman named Akbar Shamji, who he was caught lying to the police. But he did, however, tell Zach's parents, who, as you can imagine, were devastated, that for some reason Zach had fooled him and Varinda into believing that he was the son of a Russian oligarch. Needless to say, the parents, as I said, were completely devastated by this information. It was like a bombshell. Mm-hmm. And so as he delves into this case, Keefe also explores and describes London's horrific underworld, which he calls a 24-hour laundromat for dirty money. He has intimate interviews with Zach's parents, Matthew and Rochelle. They are desperate to understand what happened to Zach, how their son led a secret life like this, and how he became involved in that underworld. So Keefe ultimately does come to a conclusion and an explanation, which I obviously am not going to talk about. But this is it's just a really powerful, mesmerizing story.
Do you want to add?
Yes, I would like to add that I listened to this.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Which is one of my favorite ways to consume nonfiction. And you can really, the sort of structure of the book is really compelling when you listen to it. He's made a few podcasts before, and you can sort of tell that he is like very well aware of the cliffhanger when you are.
The power of audio?
And I think it sort of, you know, everything that one probably enjoyed about Say Nothing is here. It kind of drops you into this world, and he does a really good job of sort of expanding in and out on like a deeply personal story and then also helping you understand the ways in which it came to be in the city. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed it. And if you are someone who is a little nervous about nonfiction, who doesn't normally, I'm usually steeped in the world of literary fiction, I recommend listening to it, which you can do on Libro FM and support your local bookstore.
Imagine having not only one life at 19, but be leading a double life. Wow.
It made me so anxious.
I can only imagine. That is London Falling by Patrick Redden Keefe. It is a true crime book that is recommended by two of today's three booksellers. Drew, what do you have next?
I'm keeping in the British Isles for a moment. The Keeper, the latest ton of French. I'm hard pressed to find anybody who doesn't love Tana French. She
so
is
good.
Spectacular at writing these crime novels, these mystery novels that bump up against other genres. Her Dublin mystery books very much leaned into the like gothic, bordering on the supernatural at times. And I know I am not the only one who sort of had to recalibrate with this current trilogy featuring Cal Hooper, a Chicago cop who moves to the Irish countryside thinking he's going to get away from all of that and finds himself pulled into local politics. As I was reading this third book, which returns us to Cal's story and the sort of life that he has built for himself, I was realizing that these books are almost like Tana French doing John le Carré. They are more of a spy novel. They are more of that idea of a stranger in a strange land trying to parse the things that are being said around him. The focus is on these conversations. And so much is happening on the vocal level, but then also so much is happening on a subliminal level. And some of that is on the page. Some of that you have to intuit. Some of that the characters are trying to intuit. There's a real thrill to watching a writer who I have loved for a long time mature into a new slice of the genre, and I have a newfound respect for this entire trilogy through The Keeper, because the story itself is very compelling and fascinating, and anybody who lives in a small town can relate to like what happens when outside forces begin to impact your very lovely local community.
But nothing bad ever happens.
Certainly not murder. But that it is just a writer at the height of her powers. And I'm very excited to see where she goes next after she leaves Ardna Kelty.
Nora, you had thoughts on this one as well.
Yes. I love sharing book picks with other people.
I do. I like it too. People do say, oh, I know someone already talked about this, or it's on their list. I think it's great to hear more than one opinion. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, sell it harder.
We love to chat about it. I think that one thing that is, I also came to Tana French through the Dublin Murder Squad mysteries, which were so kind of fast-paced, and you were following all these different characters, and you really, you know, you got to stay with them for two books, but you didn't settle into them. And the way that this trilogy, where you really get to know these recurring characters, you get to notice the shifts and how they're relating to each other and the town, which, as Drew said, is like where the sort of like meat of the story is. And it's really kind of nice to see both kind of this character and Tana French sort of step into this wider expanse. It's a chunky book. And she takes her time and she sort of wanders around you can almost feel her wandering around next to Cal in the story. She's, you know, there's a reason she's considered the best at what she does.
The Keeper by Tana French, recommended again by two of our three booksellers today. Lily, what's next?
I don't know why we're all talking about crime today, but
it's, I don't know, maybe something in the air. Well, who can say?
My next book is also a true crime story, Whatever Happened to Eddie Crane by Kate Crane. Kate Crane's father disappeared in 1987 when she was 12 years old. He owned a trucking company in Baltimore, co-owned it. And one night that year, as he always did, he called to say that he was leaving work and he would be home soon, and he never made it home. And in fact, he simply vanished. 20 years later, Kate is in New York City. She's a freelance journalist. She's still suffering from depression and PTSD, not just from her father's disappearance, but also because her entire family have always had this very strong reluctance to talk about it. So she feels that the only way that she can get any relief from this thing, this central event in her life that haunts her, is to try to investigate the crime itself. So she went back to Maryland. She began investigating. She tracked down detectives, case files, old friends, family members, and she discovered some disturbing truths about her father's life. One was that the co-owner of the trucking company pretty much certainly had connections to organized crime, and also that her father may have been an FBI informant. And she also found plenty of evidence that her father was murdered. For instance, testimony about bullets and blood, his blood, that were found in his office. A witness that she spoke to said that several days before he disappeared, he had mentioned that he was sort of in fear of his life. The worst thing of all is that Kate discovers that the way the police had handled this at the time, that the response to his disappearance was, let's just say, less than rigorous, suspiciously less than rigorous, and that when she went to do this investigation, the Baltimore Cold Case Unit still had him listed as a missing person rather than a homicide victim. So anyway, whatever else Kate's research turns up, and I won't go there, but above everything else, it has allowed her to move forward without the shadow of her father's loss always with her.
Whatever happened... Excuse me. Whatever Happened to Eddie Crane by Kate Crane. Nora, what do you have next?
So my next pick is River Work by Lisa Robertson, which comes out on May 5th. The description hooked me immediately. An insomniac expat who lives in Paris, cleans apartments for a living, is obsessed with her great aunt who sort of disappeared from the family after she went to Paris and started studying this river that I won't embarrass myself by trying to pronounce, that used to exist in Paris and was sort of the like artery of industry. Like all the tanneries were on it. All of the women were washing laundry in it. And then it was covered up by the city. And so she spends a lot of her time going through her great aunt's notes and walking around the city and trying to sort of piece together other writers or like works from other writers who had written about this river. And it is so densely packed with thoughts and ideas. And because this writer is an insomniac, it sort of, the whole thing sort of felt like that first day of an international trip.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I'm so tired and I have so much to do. I'm going to go walk around this city and sort of feel like,
like here I am. Yeah. Feet on the ground.
It's
right.
That's sort of what the experience of reading the novel is, where there's a scene where she sits down on the metro in a seat that no one had sat down in. It's because there's a period stain and she starts thinking of her own fertility. And then it kind of goes to all these other different places of different writers and what it means to be a woman and what it meant to be a washerwoman. And it's like every page is full of maybe like six different ideas. It's not an easy read. It's not a beach read necessarily. It's not something that I think you will pick up for light entertainment, but Robertson is she's a poet as well as a writer, and it is such a unique, interesting experience. I really, really, really recommend this book.
I am humiliated to have never heard of The Lost River of Paris before this very morning. Like, what? I'm sure, I mean, I'm going to get email people going to be like, you really are a dum-dum. Why didn't you know? But that's very, very interesting stuff. That is River Work by Lisa Robertson. Let's go back to Lily before we go to Drew again.
another pretty serious read is Small Boat by Vincent Delacroix, translated by Helen Stevenson. This book, which is called Small Boat, is actually a small book, which, as you can see, has a pretty striking cover.
Yes.
But I have to tell you that for a book this size, it packs a wallop. It's a novel, but it's based on an actual event that occurred in November 2021, when an inflatable dinghy carrying migrants from France to the UK capsized in the English Channel, killing 27 migrants. The French authorities did receive numerous calls for help, but they untruthfully told the migrants that they were in British waters and had to contact the British authorities. It took 3 hours for rescue boats to arrive, and by that time, all but two of the migrants had died. This was the worst single loss of life ever in the English Channel. It's a fictional first-person account of the French Navy officer who took the migrants' calls and lied to them, and how she tried to justify her actions as being less responsible for this tragedy than the crises that had put the migrants in the boats to begin with. This is not an easy read. It's painful, but it's a particularly compelling story given our current situation, in a time when every single day of our lives we're confronted with yet another usually preventable tragedy, and we're left feeling powerless. So it's a gripping story, and it does ask the essential question of, to what degree are we all complicit, like every day?
Small Boat by Vincent Delacroix. Drew, what do you have next?
The Fountain by Casey Sheska. Casey is a friend. She is one of those spectacular literary citizens. She also runs with her husband, the artist and writer Steven Weinberg, the Spruceton Inn, which is out in Westkill. They do an artist residency every year. She is a big supporter of stories and storytelling. This is her debut novel, and it feels so good to read a debut by somebody who is so steeped in and who loves so deeply writing and books. It is set in the Catskills, basically around where the Spruceton Inn is. A woman comes back to where she grew up in the sort of mid-20-teens. It just so happens that this woman is also functionally immortal. She was born in 1800. She has lived many lives. She is looking to die, looking to figure out why she is living so long and how she can maybe reverse it. She ends up embroiled, not dissimilarly to the Town of French book, now that I think about it, with the town that is there, the town that has grown up, where she's like the new kid, but she's like, yeah, I remember when all of this was farmland kind of thing. It is a really stirring look at what we do with our lives and what might happen if we were to live for so long without the sort of trappings of like, and it's a vampire story. It is just, there is a mystery as to why they are immortal, but that's not actually what the story is about. It is about the legacies that we leave on the land with each other. It is such a page turner. It is a very warm-hearted book. And from a warm-hearted author, it's one of those books that just like every time a copy sells, I'm like, yes, yes.
That's The Fountain by Casey
Sheska.
Sheska. Thank you. Lily, can you do a abbreviated final book?
I'm going to try.
Thank you.
This Land Is Your Land, A Road Trip Through U.S. History by Beverly Gage. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning historian. This new book is an invitation to ride along with her on the ultimate road trip, where she makes her way across the country, stopping in at different historical moments and in different historical places, trying to shed light on our complicated history. With all its failures, all its successes, and particularly all the controversies that we're still living with about how to acknowledge or deny those truths, those real historical events, and how to teach them. Yes, I will keep it short. I could go on, as always. But
I would love for you to, but time is against us.
Because she is one of the premier young historians in the country, and because this book commemorates our 250th anniversary in such a unique way, the publisher is hopeful that this book will stand out in an absolute deluge of commemorative books this year.
This Land Is Your Land by Beverly Gage, and we are unfortunately leaving with a book left on everyone's list. But they will be.
It's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun. There's more, you know, more titles online at wamc.org/roundtable. Drew Broussard and Nora Taylor were here from Rough Draft Bar and Books in Kingston, New York, roughdraftny.com for more information. Lily Bartels here from Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York, opendoor-bookstore.com for more information about that fine establishment. Thank you all, as ever, for your time and expertise. We appreciate you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.